leaders.
We pose the problems of human beings in their relations with the world.
Change.
GP made this one right here. You know it's a hit.
Impact.
Liberation is a praxis of action, team reflection upon the world.
Welcome to the pedagogy
Justice.
Of the obsessed.
Five years ago, I was in the lobby of a regional center holding my son's hand. In my other hand, I was holding the report from the educational psychologist that had just dissected my son and labeled him as autistic. This would be in addition to the type 1 diabetes diagnosis he would receive just 3 months later. The only thing that I wanted to do at that moment was to throw away that report and hug my son, because no matter what label he had just acquired, he was still my little boy. That was the beginning of our family's journey into special education in the public school setting. In this podcast, I have the pleasure of interviewing Professor Tom Hare, the Sylvana and Christopher Pascucci Professor of Practice in Learning Differences, Disability, and Universal Design at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Professor Hare recently retired, and this podcast interview was held 2 weeks before his last class at Harvard. Here is Professor Hare, the voice of inclusion. What was the life event that you had that led you to the special education sector?
I wouldn't say it was a life event. I volunteered when I was an undergrad in community programs for people with intellectual disabilities. And I became aware of the institutionalization of people with intellectual disabilities. I took a course. I went to an institution, and I was kind of blown away by how awful these places were. And I'd been thinking about becoming a teacher, and I decided, you know, maybe I'd rather be a special ed teacher and work on getting kids out of these terrible places. Mm-hmm. And deinstitutionalization was starting at that time. And so I would say that's what got me into special ed. I also like the fact that in special ed you had smaller numbers, to be honest. Because yeah. I was thinking at one point of becoming a biology teacher, and I was thinking, well, you know, big classes, et cetera, et cetera. And then I started looking at special ed, and I was thinking, yeah, it's much, you have smaller numbers, and you really get to know the kids mm-hmm. more. Because I was, you know, thinking of being a high school teacher. And, you know, high school teachers have huge caseloads. So it wasn't like there was anything special or spiritual or anything like that. It was just the number of things that kind of came together for me. And I never left the field.
Yeah. Well, good for us. You never left, yeah. Okay, so there's many important concepts that I've taken away from your class. But I think the most important concept is you mentioned how crucial it is to establish a trusting relationship, but also a humble relationship with parents that is focused on problem solving. So what experiences did you have that led you to that realization?
Oh, wow. I think it's been a cumulative experiences and from the beginning of my career. And one is that particularly working with parents of kids with significant disabilities, when I first started teaching, I taught kids with significant disabilities, you know, they are such great informants about their own kids. And so I always felt I learned as much from parents as they may have learned from me. And, you know, what does a 21-year-old, 22-year-old really know when you're starting out teaching? You're just learning the job. That's been reinforced over and over again for me. That doesn't mean that educators don't disagree with parents, because I've had very significant disagreements with parents. But it's the way you approach it. You know, I never felt I had a bad relationship. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I felt that even though there might be a differences of opinion about where we should go, sometimes my opinion then changes, sometimes theirs does. But the idea of humility, I think, is very important. When you look at the narratives of parents of kids, particularly with significant disabilities, because so often, you know, they've had experiences, particularly with the medical system,
mm-hmm.
when their children are, even before they come to school, where they've been told by people who view themselves in authority, doctors,
mm-hmm.
That their children wouldn't be able to do this and wouldn't be able to do that, and the doctors have been proven wrong. And so often they're very skeptical about authority. And so if you come into these meetings without humility you're starting off at the wrong foot,
yeah.
I feel.
No, definitely. I mean, I can identify with that.
Yeah.
In terms of a psychologist or whoever does the first assessment, right,
yeah.
to figure
speech
out.
Speech therapist.
Yeah.
You know, any. But again, I think it's the idea of being humble, the idea of just communicating very clearly to parents that you're on their side. I think too often educators, at least in the United States, are afraid that, you know, parents are going to take them to a due process hearing, going to go to the school board or something like that. And they're very guarded in dealing with parents. And I think that's a huge mistake because for a couple of reasons. One is if we're going to be successful with kids, we have to be on the parents have to be on the same page we're on. You know, if we have a particular approach around changing behavior, we want that approach being used at home as well as in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And in any number of things, we want to make sure the schools and the parents are on the same side. We get better results when that happens. And so, you know, this relationship is one that should be creative
mm-hmm.
and not reactive.
I like that, creative.
Yeah.
And problem
well, you're
solving.
Trying to create
yeah.
the right education
mm-hmm.
for kids that times who are quite complicated.
Yes. And sometimes, you know, like it takes a whole journey to figure out
yeah.
how to put that puzzle together.
Yeah. You know, Mrs. So-and-so, what did you do when she would lie down on the floor and not move? At all. You know? And what do you do when she does that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is what I do. And they say, well, I could do that in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, simple idea. You always remind us that inclusive education is the right thing to do, but that it's not always an easy thing to do.
No.
So if we know that inclusion has so many positives for all students, but especially for special needs students, why do you think we still segregate our special needs students?
Because it's easier. I think it's easier for schools to put a bunch of kids in a room with a teacher than to look at accommodating curriculum, which means teaching it in a different way than you might have otherwise taught it, or even accommodating curriculum for some kids who might need modified curriculum, of even changing the curriculum. Schools are designed to be kind of mass production engines for the average kid, and schools generally do that pretty well. But when you have kids who are on the margins, whether they are kids who are very intellectually gifted and are going through curriculum very rapidly, or they might be a kid with an intellectual disability going through curriculum very slowly,
mm-hmm.
It requires, inclusive education requires people to question their pedagogy, question at times their discipline practices, question at times the way in which their classroom is organized and the way in which their school is organized. And, you know, change is a difficult thing for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do inclusive education well, when you haven't done it before, requires you to question some of the assumptions you might have about how you run a classroom, how you run a school. And so it's much easier to just simply put those kids someplace else as opposed to questioning those things. But when you do question those things,
mm-hmm.
the impact is beneficial for all kids.
Mm-hmm. So when you look back, is there a policy that you really felt at that time was important and would positively impact the education of special needs children, but perhaps our society or political environment was not ready to accept it at that time?
Yes. I think that the whole notion of special ed is something we should question. I mean, what kids with disabilities need is ed. And the whole notion of calling it even special, even though I'm a proud special educator, when you really think about it, it's kind of ableist that you would say that a group of kids need a special types of education. Do kids with disabilities often need things that are outside what is typically done? Sure. You know, a kid who has a speech impairment may need a speech therapist, and a non-disabled kid won't. And that should be provided by someone who is specialized.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole notion of special ed and it becoming an adjective, this is a special ed kid, or this is a special ed staff, when really we should be emphasizing ed. I know that with my former boss, who was a disability activist, Judy Heumann, we said, you know, maybe in the reauthorization we should get rid of the term special ed. But we didn't feel people would be ready for that.
Yeah, so that was one thing. Okay. Well, let's see. Maybe the next generation
right.
will be more prepared for that. All right. So speaking about policy, so your leadership in the creation of federal law and policy regarding special education continues to be instrumental in our practices in the education of special needs children. So for teachers and school and district leaders that might be listening, what would you say are the most important elements of IDEA that they should keep in mind while they're sitting in an IEP meeting?
Access to the curriculum. And I think that that was a change in 1997, and I was very much involved in that change because I was working for the federal government at the time. We changed the federal special education law to emphasize access to the curriculum, and I think that's been influential, that people have to think about how kids are going to access the curriculum. And it kind of gets to the point I made before about special ed as being something fundamentally different, when really, for the vast majority of kids, we should be looking at ways in which they can be learning in school. What are the kids learning? And that's an access issue. So from my perspective, I think the issue of access of the curriculum, I think, is critically important. And there are places, sometimes I get involved in lawsuits, you know, against school districts and so forth. And I was involved in, I think I told this anecdote in class, a lawsuit involving kids with emotional and mental health needs who had been segregated in a special high school. And I asked the principal of the high school, where are the laboratories for science? And he said, well, this is a special school. And I said, I know it's a special school, but aren't the kids learning laboratory sciences? How can any high school today not have laboratory sciences?
Mm-hmm.
But people obviously weren't looking at these kids and saying, how are they going to access the curriculum,
mm-hmm.
even though they might have serious mental health needs?
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the same question about foreign languages, and the principal said, we let them go on Rosetta Stone. Well, that's not access to foreign language instruction. And so these kids are getting a significantly inferior education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the name, in the sense of special ed.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
From my perspective, you know, these kids who are being denied their rights as disabled people
mm-hmm.
to have access
yeah. as learners.
To education.
Yeah.
As learners.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that that's still an emerging issue.
To do, yeah. It reminds me of the principal from the Manning at last night's class.
Yeah, they were great, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And just to talk about how there are two things that they really always keep there and will not get rid of is access to visual arts
yeah.
and then access to, what was it, to science, I
yeah.
think, in general, yeah.
yeah.
As being opportunities for all of the students to
yeah.
be able to partake
exactly,
in that learning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've had the unique experience of sitting on both sides of an IEP meeting as a parent and as a principal. So I have some thoughts on what works and what doesn't work in supporting parents with special needs. But I would love to hear your thoughts on how education leaders and teachers can support families with special needs in our public schools.
Yeah. It's relationships. You know, I feel that if the relationship is starting at the IEP meeting, you've already failed.
Mm-hmm.
That I always felt, I remember when IEPs came in, because
mm-hmm.
I taught special ed. I taught in a separate special education classroom prior to IDEA. And I remember IEP meetings coming in and having to make, you know, and I thought it was a good thing. I still think it's a good thing to
mm-hmm.
have this, because because I do think kids need individualized approaches, and I do think that schools need to have, in a sense, a contract with parents around what that, which is what, in a sense, an IEP is, not technically. But for me, I felt that the IEP meeting should be the end result of a ongoing relationship between parents and the school district. And so from my perspective, having that relationship where you've already discussed the tough issues before you have the IEP meeting, I mean, can turn the IEP meeting more into a celebration as opposed to a battlefield. And too often it's a battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or it feels like people are walking on eggshells.
They are.
Around each other.
They really are, which is not the... It's not healthy. Mm-hmm. It's not a healthy relationship between educators and parents. And but having that relationship and at times having maybe difficult discussions long before you get into that meeting where there's an honest back and forth between educators and parents, I think can go a long way to making those... better experiences for both educators and parents. And the research on parents in IEP meetings is parents are nervous. They find them to be very stressful events for them. Mm-hmm. And some educators do as well.
Yeah, no, especially when you walk into the room and you have a child that requires, you know, a 12-member IEP team and you see everyone around the table and then you have to sit there. It's nerve-wracking.
Yeah. It really is.
Mm-hmm. So, but I think that's been helpful for me to experience it as a parent.
Yeah.
That when I'm sitting there as an administrator, I have to remember that feeling of when you walk into that meeting.
Yeah, and I think people should try to avoid 12-member IEP meetings. Mm-hmm. I think people should.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need for absolutely everybody to be there. And often that makes the parents feel they're being ganged up on.
Yeah. There's more of them than of me. Yeah.
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 And they've already decided what to do.
They've already decided what to do. Right. Exactly. They're going to tell me what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good way to establish a productive relationship.
What excites you and brings you hope regarding the future of the educational system?
I think when I go to schools that have embraced diversity and inclusion and see kids who previously... their counterparts 20 years ago may have been in segregated environments and now in integrated environments and doing terrifically well.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm teaching this class that I teach, and so many people in the class have now had experiences as children going to school with kids with disabilities, where that's new.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started teaching this class, it was not the case
that
the actual students in the class had gone to school with students with disabilities. And the fact that, you know, here at Harvard, you know, we have now students with very significant disabilities at Harvard University and at universities throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge change.
Amazing, yeah.
And that gives me optimism.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a pleasure to be a student in your class.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure to have you.
As educators, we have all sat through IEP meetings, and let's be honest, we have probably complained about those angry and demanding parents. After having sat on both sides of the IEP table, I began to truly listen, and what I heard were stories of pain and despair and a loss of hope. Our special education system, the one that promises hope and achievement for all children, is not perfect. And in some communities, it is broken and failing special needs children every day. It fails when it does not provide students with the necessary academic, social, or medical supports. It fails every time that it does not acknowledge the pain of the special needs parent. It fails when it views parents as adversaries. And it fails when non-English speaking parents are not afforded their rights during an IEP meeting. Our nation's president also fails our special needs children when he mocks a citizen with special needs on national television. I took Professor Tom Hare's class at Harvard because I did not feel that I had done enough to solve the inequities in education. So I invite all of you who have just heard this podcast and want to make education more equitable for all students to join me in setting a goal. What part resonated the most with you about what Professor Hare said about inclusive education? What can you do to better engage the parents of special needs students at your school or district? Finally, what will you do differently tomorrow to help build an inclusive community in your schools?
We pose the problems of human beings in their relations with the world. Knowledge emerges only through invention and reinvention, through the restless and patient continuing, hopeful inquiry human beings pursue in the world, and with each other. The solution is not to integrate them into the structure of oppression, but to transform that structure so that they become beings for themselves. Liberation is a praxis of action and reflection.